Salofa, welcome to the Samoan Scientist Podcast. Today I'm chatting with Michelle Ilia Siluatsa, and yeah, I'm really excited for this episode. Morning, Michelle.
Morning. Morning, Amy.
Can you please introduce yourself to all of our listeners?
Yeah. Talofa lava, kia rana. My name's Michelle Ilia Siluatsa. I'm of Samoan and Cook Island descent. And I live here in Tamaki Makaurau, originally from Porirua in Wellington. I'm currently an investment analyst, but I have a background of all sorts, bit of a fruit salad, but yeah, that's cool. And today we're going to talk about each of these things.
Yeah. So where would you like to start, I guess? What do you want to talk? What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? What's on my mind? I guess probably what drew me to come here and chat with you, actually. Like, I'm actually super inspired by Amy and her work. There's few of us Pacific people, Samoan even fewer, who are working in the space of STEM. So I was just really happy to contribute in any way using some of my, I guess, experience from perhaps past roles within the community, and even just now, like the outlook, what Pacific diets look like for us going forward, how we can draw on our history and try to merge the best of the both worlds together.
Cool.
Yeah.
I guess, how did you come about to, because I want to ask about your PT experience, because I didn't actually know about that until recently. So yeah. How did that come about?
Yeah, I know. I'm a spitter. So I was, we're going back a few years now. I was in high school. Actually, we'll start way back when I was younger. And I grew up in a household with my parents and my brother. And so mum's Cook Island Māori, dad's Samoan. And my dad had diabetes. He actually had everything under the sun in terms of NCDs. And I knew his medication schedule down to a T, because I just, like, I knew what he had to do, like what to take morning, afternoon, evening. I knew the little blood tests that he had to do. And like growing up, it was so normal. But it wasn't until I got to my teenage years that I realized what he was taking this medication for. And, you know, learnt a little bit more about diabetes, learnt a bit more about Pacific people in our space and society, and how that's changed over time in New Zealand. Learned about how he got diabetes in the first place. So when I got to my teen years, that is what drove me to want to be a personal trainer. 'Cause when I was a teenager, my metabolism, and I'm sure everyone's metabolism was super fast, eh? It was just like, yeah, you could literally eat, kind of like go to McDonald's or Burger King or whatever like that, and it would just burn off straight away. So my mindset when I was a teenager wasn't really on the food side. It was more like, oh, how could I train and be better that way and not really think too much about nutrition. So that was a whole like combination of how I went down the personal trainer route. And plus I humble beginnings, like worked at Pack and Save and there was heaps of Pacific people around me, and I always used to, because I was just this like skinny little thing, right? It's just, you know, and I would see my people who were older than me, they just they look different, and they would always kind of make these comments about, oh, you're so small. I'm sure a lot of our Pacific people have gotten these kinds of comments, like, why do you look this way, or da da da. And I was like, at the time, I was playing a lot of sports and you know, had the fast metabolism, so it contributed to the way I looked, but I never really thought outside, like, okay, so why are my people, you know, looking different to me in terms of body size, size, just image, and just all these different things were so, mind-boggling at the time.
Mm.
Yeah. Which was a good motivator, actually, to get into personal training.
Mm.
Really interesting time back then.
And I was thinking about your dad, like how you were managing all of his medication.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that like for you, having to, it sounded like, look, like care for your parent?
Yeah, it was so normal, because you don't really think about, it was like the same way I woke up for school and got ready for school.
Mm.
His medication routine was a part of that routine, so I never thought about it until like I kind of got later into my teens. But I remember this one time when my dad used to have this little blood test machine. It's like, it was literally that size, and you used to prick your finger, and you know, blood come out, and then you test the blood on this thin strip, and then it would measure kind of acceptable levels, blood sugar levels.
Yeah.
And it was like between 4 and 7, I believe. I don't know 4 and 7 what, but yeah. It was between 4 and 7. But one day I came home, he would test my blood sugar alongside his tests to make sure I was in the range. And that was his way of, you know, saying, without explicitly saying, like, I really want you to be healthy and not have to go down this route. One day I came home and my mum had made cake and custard. And I ate it. And for some reason, like, he wanted to test my blood sugar levels straight after.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 8. It was 8 point something. And then he, like, banned all sugar from my diet. This was 8-year-old me. Imagine the horror. So little events like that, like, had me think, oh, this must be a lot more serious than, you know, probably I originally thought. Yeah.
I think, I was just thinking as well, like, it's really valuable to have that knowledge.
Yeah.
And also he had the, I forgot the proper name, but, like, the blood glucose measurement.
Yeah.
And he was so regiment about it. Like, that's, yeah, I feel that's important when you're looking up, when you're thinking about your health.
Just yeah.
Just being on top of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And then going to, you talked about wanting to more about the exercise side, because you felt that, you're quite confident with the types of foods that you're eating. So, like, what was that process like, looking at, like, exercise?
Yeah, but in my mind at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, because I'm playing all this sport and stuff and I'm active, it makes sense. Like, it's, how do you say, like, cancelling each other out almost. Like, I can go and eat this something and then just go play volleyball the next day. And I just thought that's how things work. I was just like, surely this is the same, you know, equation that works for everyone. And it got to a point. So, yeah, you have those, like, bless my high school relationship. You know how you get those high school relationships and, you know, you have a little ting and it lasts for longer than a year, and then, you know, you go takeaways together, and all of a sudden you're doing the 3 choice at the Chicken Shack at Porirua, like, every second day. So I gained a lot of weight over, I think, like, a period of like 9 to maybe 12, 15 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from this, like, skinny little thing to, like, under 70 kgs to about 104.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was when I realized the food the food and sports equation wasn't working. And I was like, okay, maybe sports needs to work alongside nutrition. So that, I was about 17 at the time. And then I would look at, you know, the rugby players in First 15 and, you know, their diets, and that they trained really hard. So I was like, what's the difference between my training that I do, you know, kind of here and there at the gym at the time, or like on a sports field?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the difference between mine and the food I'm eating versus like them, the food they're eating, the fact that they're boys, you know, just all these different things contributed to my ideas of, I guess, optimal health at the time, because that was really my goal.
And then what was the PT process like when you had that realization, or that realization about the connection between food and exercise? Like, what made you want to go into PT, and how did you get into a course, and what was the course like, or did you even do a course? What was that like?
I did 1 year full-time or part-time, I think it was. No, it was part-time. Course with the New Zealand Institute of Health and Fitness.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of like, I guess, a competitor to the New Zealand Institute of Sport in terms of personal training courses. And so I went there alongside my university, and it was actually part of my journey of losing weight and getting to understand myself. And part of that course is that you had to train at a local gym. Mm-hmm. You had to have like your own client base, you had to take them through exercise routines, you had to measure, you know, what their food and what their food plans look like. So it was a really holistic journey of not just taking the course, but also how it fit into my, you know, my roadmap of success and what that looked like for me at the time. So I was actually... one of my good friends at the time, she tried to make me go to the gym when I was 16, I think. Like, I was working, you have a little bit of money coming in, you know. You might be on that $7-$8 an hour, but you had something rolling in. And I was still in that mindset of like, oh, no, I really don't need a gym. Like, sports are enough for me. And then when I saw, like, my weight just wasn't shifting, I was like, okay, actually, maybe I do need to go into the gym. And I learnt a lot about my body during that time, because, bless, I went to a women's only gym in Porirua, and every 6 weeks the trainers gave you a reassessment. So they tracked where you were and what your food plan looked like, which is actually really helpful when you're, like, teens, and that really helped me not only monitor myself, but it was like a way for me to, I guess, realize that personal training, it wasn't just, you know, the fitness side of it. It's like it's a very full process that looks at your food, your training, you know, your environment, what kind of stress levels that you are under, and it's just really all-encompassing. So, huge driver when I actually went into the course, like knowing that I had that, knowing that I was going through like my weight loss journey, that I had my dad's kind of lifestyle in the back of my head, that 8-year-old me who had their finger pricked and couldn't have sugar for the next 5 years, like, that stuck with me. So it's actually just all these little motivations that just really added up. And then when I went into that course, like, my mind was just so set. Like, I want to be a trainer. I want to help other people in the community, Pacific people especially, Māori and Pacific. And I wanted everyone to learn more about their bodies the way that I was learning about it at the time. Yeah. What a great reflection session.
And it sounded like that was kind of your light bulb moment when you went into the PT course, because as you said, it combined all of your life experiences in terms of health and exercise. Yeah, did it feel like that type of moment for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my, so you had practice clients and it was part of your practical assessments. And one of my clients was my mum. Yeah, so I, I just was like, you know, I went straight for it. And it wasn't like a demeaning thing. I was just like, you know, I'd like you to, I'd like to train. And she came with me and we worked that pack and save together. It was, oh, bless. Wait, what was the question?
Oh, I was just saying, like, it was quite a beautiful moment for you when you did the PT course, because it was a combination of all your life experiences. And did you feel that way, that it was a light bulb moment for you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The light bulb moment was, that's where I got with my mum, was when I brought my mum in. And she was, because at the time, disclaimer, at the time, we weren't living off my dad anymore, and it was just me and my mum. And when I brought her to the gym, I saw her stress levels change. Like, I saw her enjoying it, and she wasn't really there to lose weight, and that even switched my mindset of like, okay, maybe everyone's not like doing personal training to lose weight, maybe they just want to be happy. And when you find out little bits of, I guess, knowledge like that, it just really adds layers to your motivation and to finding out more about other people and what drives them. And in turn, that actually drives you to want to do better in the greater sense of things. So, yeah, it was such a light bulb moment for me. I think I used to be a Zumba instructor.
True.
Yeah, as well. That was also part of my journey. And my mum would come to my Zumba classes, and she might not have had any of the steps down, but she she was like going the other way when everyone was going right. She was going left. She was just so happy. Like, she was so happy to be in the space of other women, and she was so happy to move freely, and that was what fitness looked like to her. And it was a different thing of what fitness looked like to me. And the more women that I took through the reassessment 6-week reassessment program when I was training there, the more I realized that, okay, everyone's goals are different, everyone's not just trying to lose weight and be this skinny mini all the time.
You mentioned as well that you worked at Pack and Save, and were you also studying at uni at the time?
Yeah.
And you also did the PT course.
Yeah.
So how did that work out in terms of like balancing everything?
I was such a high achiever, like, it's not even funny. Like, I was like, I will do anything to make this work, because every single thing that I did was contributing to my what success looked like for me at the time. So if I wanted to be a personal trainer, I would make that work. If I wanted to finish my degree, because I did commerce, which was a complete other end of the spectrum, but I also wanted to make that work. So I to be honest, the years between like 17 and 20 were that just the absolute hustle years for me. I worked part-time. I was like, I need to make sure I have money to put gas in my car to get to and from these courses, because Pack and Save was in Porirua. Like, then I would go to university during the day, then I would go to PT and course at night. And then, yeah, I look back sometimes and I'm like, who are you? Because this is not you now. just had to make it work, eh? Yeah.
And what is an example of, like, making it work? Can you remember what, like one thing you'd do before you go to bed so that the next day you'd ha be prepared?
Yeah, back then phones weren't
Phones
they were there.
different, yeah.
They were there.
But not like today.
Not like today.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I was up on, it's like socials all night. And it wasn't like, those are the days that if you wanted to talk to someone will just call your landline and that's how you talk to them. So I didn't have all these, I guess, more occupying space in my mind type of things that, the youth have today, or actually just anyone has today, because I, yeah, no stranger to scrolling on the socials these days. So I think if a like a typical day for me would look like just wake up, get to the train station to go to catch a train to town, obviously catch the bus up to uni, do all your courses, and then after that, sometimes I had to head back to Porirua to work for a bit and then come back out to town again to do my PT course. It's crazy now that I'm saying this out loud. And you know what? There were so many others doing the same thing, exactly the same thing. Just to think that today, like, I'm sure there's students out there or just, everyone having to juggle all these different responsibilities and goals and da da da. But if I were to compare it to like now, I think as a teenager, I don't have all the, it was a different type of stress, The types of stress I have now is just completely like, yeah, different to 18-year-old me.
And what do you think of, like, what is your perspective of health now, or like fitness and nutrition now?
Yeah. I was thinking about this last night. I was like, I'm sure she's gonna ask a question like that. I think now that we're older, obviously, like our perspective of what health and fitness looks like is so different because now I take more into account, like a just a more holistic view, including the spiritual, including it's not just food and getting fit anymore. It's all about what your stress levels look like. Are you cool with yourself now? Will you be, if you went on a 6-week challenge, I was talking to my mate about this the other day. If you went on a 6-week challenge, are you still cool with your that before self? The same level of cool as you are with that, 5 kgs down, 10% body fat down, like, are you still the same person kind of spiritually at the beginning and the end of the challenge? Like, those things are so key to me.
That's a question. That's a
That's
really
a
good
question. That's facts.
Yeah.
That's a question.
Yeah.
But back then, like, the way that I perceived what health and fitness looked like to me was like skinny.
Same.
Like,
Yeah, I would say
yeah.
same as a teenager.
Yeah. Like, just make sure your weight's under a certain, like, da da da.
And I would exercise to kind of punish myself for eating like a pie or like having McDonald's.
That's crazy. I did
Yeah, like I don't know
too.
if it's just our generation and that mindset and what was
Yeah.
going on in media, but that's how I perceived, like, that was my relationship with exercise and food.
And so many others are just like that. It's, yeah. Actually, I see a lot of my friends, like, I'm still friends with now, and back then when, we were all going through these changes of, like, getting the bikini body or whatever, like, we have a much more relaxed approach to the fitness side. Like, sure, like, we'll go to the gym and we'll smash out a workout and we'll be happy to do, a 45-minute F45 class, that's fine. But that mental space, like, if that's not right, then we know that the gym just won't, like any workout won't be as beneficial as if, as opposed to us being all right up here in our minds and our, just our hearts, and then going to the gym. Mm. So there's this, like, I was thinking about this saying the other day of, like, you know, if your body is right, your mind will follow, or something like that. No, I don't believe that, eh?
Yeah. I don't, right. Yeah, your mind will follow.
Something along those lines. Basically saying, like, go smash out a workout, go gym, and then, you know, the healthy mindset will come after that. It's like,
I think it might be like a jump starter, but not like something sustainable.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Mm. If you're on the comeback after a breakup, sure, okay. Mm. Yeah, it works in specific situations, right?
Yeah. And you mentioned, spirituality. Could you talk about that more?
So I realised the spiritual aspect came into play with everyone's fitness journeys when I lost my dad myself. So I lost him, he passed away from NCDs, like he had renal failure, when I was 22. That's really young. It's really young. And I remember, like, when I was going through the personal training, like, people would say to me, you know, when I would reassess their goals and stuff, I've had a family member pass away, and then you'd see, like, a real drastic change in their weight, either their weight or just, like, how often they would come to the gym, like, whether they came on time or not. So that was all the, that would have been, you know, a bit of depression or just, like, eating your feelings type thing. Mm-hmm. And I never quite understood it because at that time I hadn't lost anyone close to me. So when I, you know, lost my dad, I went through this, like, I went through a really, really interesting phase where I was like, okay, I could either just go and work out really hard so I don't go down a path of NCDs, or I could actually take care of my mind. And I found that they work together. So I couldn't just do one or the other. And I would say when I turned, like, 22, 23, that's when my levels of empathy really came in. And I had to really just reassess myself, and realize how much life events really impact on your health and fitness. Like, for example, having depression, your mind's just not right in that point of time. And then trying to chase after your goals, whether that be in the gym or, like, career goals, it works to an extent, but it doesn't work wholeheartedly, eh? So that was, like, a turning point for me on the spiritual side, because I had to realize that the bigger picture has to include, like, all of your past events, you know, what happened to you from the time you were growing up, like, and then also your parents. So at that time, I was thinking about what my parents went through when they moved here, all of the anguish they kind of went through with, whether it be the dawn raids or, like, working in the factories, all that stuff that they were talking about to me when I was growing up, it clicked when I lost my dad. And, I mean, it took a while to click, but it clicked. That's the main thing, that it clicked and it woke me up. So, yeah, the older I get, the spiritual journey looks different next to the PT stuff and nutrition stuff, but it's still very much there. Yeah. Michelle, what about you? The spiritual side, because that's an interesting question.
Yeah, because I asked you about that because I don't really have much of a spiritual connection. Like, I don't go to church. I believe in, like, some sort of higher power, but I don't practice spirituality or, like, a connection to a higher power or spirituality every day.
Mm.
And so I guess the closest that I'd come to was music, really.
Oh,
that
true.
Was kind of like my own spirituality, but I don't do that as much anymore.
Mm.
So yeah, I thought it was just really interesting that when we're looking at health, that spirituality is also part of that journey, as well as like nutrition and exercise,
yeah,
and mental health, mental well-being,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, because then you've got yeah, no, you're right. You've got practices like yoga and stuff,
mm,
which incorporates the spiritual side. And I picked up yoga actually after my dad passed. So it was a really good way to tap into that spiritual side a little bit more. But it's like, yeah, I was on different journeys than probably everyone else in the yoga class. And a lot of people at that time went to yoga to kind of calm their mind,
mm-hmm,
where I was going to yoga to learn more about myself and how I worked, what makes me tick, really.
Mm.
So, yeah. All the breath work and stuff, like yoga, and finding out the differences between yoga and Pilates, that was really helpful.
When you say you went to yoga to learn more about yourself, like, yeah, what does that look like?
It looked like, because I was looking for peace at the time and what peace looked like for me.
Okay.
And yoga looked like a more peaceful practice than, say, like a gym class at the time.
Got it.
Yeah. So I would do both. But yoga was, and it was hot yoga too.
Oh, that's like it, next level. Isn't it?
Actually, next level.
Isn't it like Bikram? No, that's something else.
Or
was it just called hot?
Hot
yoga. Hot yoga.
Yeah, it's hot yoga.
They, I have heard of it though.
It must be Bikram.
Yeah,
surely.
I know people have talked about it. And they're like, oh, I just love it. Just doing yoga in the heat.
Yeah. It's different. It's different. They crank the heat up to like 30 something, and then you've just got to like breathe through.
Mm.
I don't do it anymore.
And I wanted to ask about food and what that look like, your relationship with food now, because we've talked a little bit about how you're eating seasonally.
Yeah. So yeah, now that I'm kind of like, I've just moved from the islands, so that was a whole, so I lived in the Cooks in Rarotonga for the last 4 years, and obviously there you have an abundance of like fruit, veg, fish, just the old school diet, hey? And it was so normal. Like, I lived across from the market, so if I ever needed any fresh anything, I would just cross the road. Like, it was so accessible. And then we have the family plantations, and my uncles would go up and tend to them, and they'd pick the pawpaws and stuff, and they would literally have, like, a whole box of, like, pawpaw, lemon, passion fruit, mango sometimes, and it'd be like, here, take this home. And that, because it's your family plantation, you just take it. Mm-hmm. They're not expecting anything from you because it's your family land. And then I came here, and during my time in the Cooks, I was thinking about the voyage a lot, and I was thinking about how back in the day, you know, one of the last stops before Aotearoa was Taratonga, was where I was. And I thought about how our ancestors would have packed the boats with food, you know, the food that they were used to up in that area, kind of near the equator. So that's your coconut, your just everything, basically, I said. And then bringing it down here, imagine trying to plant that and realizing it won't grow.
Mm.
That's crazy. They would have been so gutted. They would have been like, and it's cold. They hop
very
off the
cold.
Yeah, they hop off the vodka and they're like, what is this? Like, beautiful, like great. Heaps of land too compared to the islands, but nothing would grow. So they had to adapt to the environment. So when I first moved here, my stomach just wasn't happy because I just moved from like this tropical way of eating to you know, having everything so accessible. I think I ran up my Uber Eats bill like crazy. I was posting about it too because I was just happy. I was like, oh, there's noodles. So before the cooks, I lived in China. Yeah, just throwing out these random places. And even in China, I had a specific diet for China. Mm-hmm. Like I, in the mornings, I would have noodles, like fresh noodles. Yeah, hard. And it was so cheap and it was there. So the same way that it was cheap in there, in the cooks, was the exact same way that it was cheap in there in China. So I would have like baozi, which is like steamed buns, mm-hmm. you know, like pork buns.
For breakfast or?
Oh, sometimes for breakfast, sometimes for lunch. Yeah. And it was just all fresh. Because I lived in an area, like a really rural area where agriculture was just thriving. Mm. So everything was super cheap. And it's China, it's cheap. So we lived there for 3 years. And then when I first moved to Raro, I had that same stomach thing of like, oh, goodness, I have to adjust to the local environment now. But that is, adjusting to the island environment, I found for me was just in my genes. Like, I knew I would eventually adjust to it. Same thing, coming to New Zealand, I was like, okay, I'm trying to eat according to what I want to eat.
And what not, you want to eat?
Yeah.
Like Uber Eats?
Yeah. Wow, that's the confrontation for me. I wasn't expecting that.
But it is exciting because, like, I know living in Samoa, there wasn't a lot of sushi. And if there was sushi, it'd be really expensive. So whenever I came to New Zealand, like, back home for holiday, I'm like, sushi, like, that's what I want because I can't get it back in Samoa.
Yes.
So
it's just like, okay. So I was eating what I wanted to eat, which was everything I didn't have in Raro.
Yeah.
That's what I had in China, so I was having like the noodles and stuff, and it's Auckland, they're everywhere. But I wasn't eating according to the seasons, and I was trying to look for things that just weren't, it's just not seasonal. So I was trying to go towards more like your tropical fruit still, and I was getting like the fresh. I was just like, what are you doing? And so I thought, okay, I think one of the good ways to really adjust to Aotearoa is to just eat seasonal, eat what is available in that season. So whether that's like kumara or broccoli or what else is seasonal? I forget. Lemon's also seasonal at this time. Ginger's very seasonal. So just incorporating that into my daily diet made a huge difference. It was okay, so I had this thought about back in the day, you know, when even women had periods, like what did they crave? Like, did they crave, you know, sweet things or whatever? And I wonder what they had, kind of just would have had kumara. But then I noticed that when I was eating kumara during, you know, my cycle, that I wouldn't crave chocolate. So I just kept eating kumara. I know.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking like, oh, what's the science behind it? Is there any research about that?
Yeah. And it was just so interesting the way I was changing my diet to adjust to the seasons. Like, it just made my mind expand a little bit more, thought about all that stuff. I still eat chocolate, but, you know, probably a little less during times that I have kumara, actually. Yeah.
And what made you eat the kumara during your menstrual cycle? Experimenting.
I was actually experimenting, because I was like, chocolate's pretty expensive. Kumara's also expensive these days. But I was also trying to cut down on the sugar, the processed sugar side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was my whole, like, push towards it.
And what else did you notice?
And plus we got an air fryer, so.
Oh, that's perfect. It's, like, way easier, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was going to ask, so when you are eating more seasonally here in Aotearoa,
yeah,
what do you notice about yourself? Like, does it affect your... Yeah, what does it affect?
It affects my mood. Mm. Like, I don't know the science behind it, like, at all, and I don't even want to assume. But it just makes, it makes me much happier in the times that I'm eating all the seasonal food, because I know that's also how my ancestors would have lived as well. Whether that's here in Aotearoa or in the islands, like, they eat according to the season. You know, even when I was younger, like, my mom would crave mango during the, you know, summer. Like, she wouldn't crave mango in the winter. So it was just, really interesting. I think my nutrition journey now is a real product of all of the stories from when I was growing up. Got me thinking a lot, actually.
No, it's really interesting to make that I guess, like, realization just from living in China and then Cook Islands and coming here to New Zealand, that you were eating foods from your environment, from those different places, and that when you made those changes, like, physically, your body kind of just had to adjust. And you had to make the decision of what does the adjustment look like. And I feel like people nowadays generally don't know about foods that are seasonally grown, because they're just so easily bought, they're just ready in the supermarket. And so I think your observation with eating seasonally is, like, listening to the environment, because it provides what we need during that time. So I immediately, when you mentioned lemons, like, lemons are always available in the winter, and we often get sick during the winter. And so lemons, and I usually drink lemon and honey. So that helps, you know, prevent us from getting sick. So it's like making those connections, I think. It's really nice that you're on that journey. And I think more people should be aware of just the environment and the foods that they're eating.
Absolutely. And also, there's a lot of things that play into that. And, you know, it also depends on people's goals and where they are in their own kind of nutrition journey as well. Like, I know a lot of, like, some of my good friends, I go back to the challenges thing, right? But they have strict diet plans that actually aren't seasonal at all. Like, you know, I look at them, it's protein heavy, but it's protein that maybe isn't seasonally available. It's the easiest way I can put it. So they're your meats and things. Makes me think about, you know, what happened back in the day when our ancestors came here and they had to, like, what animals did they bring? You know, what survived? How did they get their protein? Probably through fishing. But I don't know many meal plans that are very fish heavy. Maybe I'm going to the wrong website. But even when I was, like, a PT, it made me kind of reflect on this. Like, the meals that you would suggest to your clients, like, they would revolve around, like, your chicken, veg, carbs. And I would suggest that kind of diet to Pacific people. Like, you know, they were a bit bigger, but it was so far from the traditional diet. And, you know, suggesting this my diet when I was training them is, now that I think about it, had pushed them even further from the traditional diet. But then they were also going to places like, you know, things that they were readily available, like your McDonald's, KFC, and all that kind of stuff. And you wanted to introduce some sort of something that was sustainable. and that wouldn't rack up their bill too much. Yeah, but I don't remember ever suggesting like kumara or broccoli in their meal plans. This was 10, 12 years ago. A lot of things has changed now. So.
Yeah, I was thinking I did like F45 a couple of years ago and they had meal plan there.
I did not know this. When was this?
I think this is when I first came back from Samoa and then I like fucked up my hip while I was doing F45 because there was a lot of jumping.
Yes.
And shit like that, and then I didn't like stretch properly after.
Yeah.
But then they had all the meal plans set up and everything, and I think they would have like kumara salad and like things like that.
Oh yeah.
But it'd just be like lentils, salad, yeah, chicken. That's what I remember, and like really, like yucky foods. Like I did right. not like that. Yeah.
Did we have lentils like in our traditional diet? Nah.
Yeah, they have like beans and stuff like that.
Oh, like the green beans,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, green beans.
But not like lentils, sort of, kidney beans, sort of.
No.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people recommend that because there's not a lot of research behind traditional foods. And so people are just going based on what the nutritionists recommend. Nutritionists are going off just what the research recommends.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, there is a certain point that we keep getting repetition of these foods.
Yeah.
And it also works, like, that works really well for some people.
Yeah.
For others, it doesn't. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole thing, eh?
Yeah.
Hey, if there's any nutritionists, any Pacific nutritionists out there who you know, work with the traditional diet and incorporate that into, like, training modules, personal training, let us know, because yes. that information is gold. Like, it's actually gold. And that's, to be honest, that's kind of where I'm trying to push my body towards. I was like, I'll adjust to the traditional diet first and then see how my personal training kind of fits in with that diet. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you still doing PT work today?
Nah, the last time I was a PT was 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go back to that PT industry, like, a lot has changed over the last 10, 12 years. So I was, I got qualified about 19 or 20 and 32 now. Mm-hmm. So from the, and plus I was a Zumba instructor.
Yeah.
So Zumba is like dying out pretty much. It's, if not, it's already gone.
I feel like it was pretty strong in Samoa.
Yes, no, you're right. Sorry, I love the Samoa. I take that back. Comes to New Zealand, forget to roots, because it's also strong in the cooks.
Yeah.
The Ura Fitness is coming on stronger as well. So that's a traditional exercise.
Yes.
I don't know if back in the day, like, how people used to do Ura to get fit, but it's separate. Yeah. Hope some other scientists out there. And,
that'd be cool.
Yeah. But in that time, like, there was the rise of things like CrossFit, it's F45. Yes. And when they came on so hard.
Mm.
So that was around, I want to say, 2014, 2015. And my decision to leave the PT industry was because I could see the general, I guess, shift in people's goals in my community, in Porirua anyway. So back then, we didn't have the $7 City Fitness memberships that you have today. It was a very, the other thing was that I saw, like, especially in my gym, the owner, he had a very sales-driven kind of mindset, which was really hard to meet my values as a personal trainer because I wanted to help my people, the community, like the women at the gym. But then you also had to balance that with the need to sell more memberships.
Yeah.
And
it's a business.
It's a business. Yeah. It's a business at the end of the day. Yeah. Yeah. And at the time, your competition in the area that's when like things like 24 Fitness started popping up, and you know, your competition at the time was like cheaper memberships.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you weren't competing on service anymore. You were competing with these rising kind of fitness trends. And I saw that change. I saw like my own clients say, oh, I've got family that go here to CrossFit, which is all good, like sweet is, you know, now I want to go here, or like, you know, this gym membership is a little bit expensive, I want to go to the $7 or $8 one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't input it all at the time, you just can't compete with that. And I would, if the sales Michelle were to step into the game, I would try to keep them in the gym. But I just knew that wasn't right. If all your family is going to City Fitness and it's $10 cheaper than the current membership that you're paying for, I can't be like, okay, stay here. I already know the background of the members, and yeah, so.
Mm.
Just it was a really tricky industry. I could see it. So I didn't leave because I lost faith in like, you know, PTing or my people or whatever. Like I left because of all this other competition that won over the true value that I saw in personal training in the first place. Yeah, that's pretty tricky.
And so your values didn't align. You decided to just have a break for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. What did you do instead?
I went back to corporate. I went back to the corporate life. Hey. Yeah, and that. Even in that corporate environment, I brought my PTing. Like, I would do, like, boot camps at lunchtime and stuff. I know. Can't escape the game, eh? And then after that, I moved to China. No, I moved to Australia before I moved to China.
Mm.
Yeah.
Were you doing corporate work in Australia?
Yes. Yeah. And then I went to China to teach part-time.
So you did a commerce degree, and is that how you got into the corporate
side
of your journey? Okay. Tell us a bit more about the commerce degree and then how you pathwayed into a job.
So this is the life that had to act in parallel to my PT life. Yep. So I did a Bachelor of Commerce at Victoria, and I majored in HR and management.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was younger and growing up, like I got a scholarship and I worked for a law firm, and I was able to see like what the corporate looked like when I was kind of 16. And I really liked the HR side of it. So once I got that degree, once I graduated from both that degree and the personal training course, I moved to Raro temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I lived there for 6 months, and that was the first place I practiced personal training outside of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wanted to get into the HR side as well. So I applied for a few jobs in Raro, but anyone who works in the Pacific knows that the wages in the island aren't the most attractive.
Yeah.
So I boomeranged back to New Zealand. I went into corporate that way. New Zealand's a really interesting environment, that if you're not in like a grad program, like specifically for, like specifically to, what do you call it? Complement your major.
Mm-hmm.
So like grad programs for like HR or management, mm-hmm. or science or something, then it's a little bit harder to get into that specific field.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went into corporate, I actually didn't really touch the HR management side, and to be honest, I don't think I've use the HR management side. But that's not to say that those skills weren't transferable into the corporate roles that I mm-hmm. ended up going into. Because now I'm like in the other, I'm in finance now. That's a whole other journey. But it's also a reflection of all these different steps over, I call them the zigzags of my 20s, mm. like all the different steps over that time. And then coming into finance now, it's hard to change careers, but it works.
Mm.
Yeah, if you can make it work for you.
I was just thinking, like, we love zigzags.
We love the zigzags.
I think they need to be embraced more. And
oh,
I
yeah.
think you made a really good point of saying, I did a commerce degree and I had mainly in HR management.
Yeah.
But I didn't directly do that. Like, that was my career pathway. But the skills that I learned in that degree helped on my zigzag journey.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is really important to students who are in high school who have to decide what they want to do when they are 15. Or something because
yeah.
they choose their papers
yeah
and that it's not always going to be like that you can zigzag your way through life and you will find something there for you.
That's gospel. Let me tell you, if you are in university or high school and you know not too sure which way you want to go, you'll get to whatever success looks like for you. It might be the longest way possible, but yeah, you'll definitely get there.
And you said that you're in finance now?
Yeah.
So what's finance?
Finance, so I work in investment, so in superannuation more particular.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know, superannuation, kind of like a KiwiSaver, works to accumulate your money over your lifetime, so it's long-term horizon. And then you're able to get that money, you know, when you hit the pension age, which is 65 in New Zealand. So what we do at work is we invest that money so that these pools of money can be bigger, really. And it, once you get to pension age, you have something to look forward to.
Oh, so are you responsible for what, I forgot the name of it, but like what stocks that the superannuation fund should be invest in?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like what stocks they pick. Some of our teams do that, like an internal team, you know, they can stock pick. And
can you just describe what stocks are?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. It's like, it's confusing. Yeah. I had to do a lot of reading about it.
Yes. It confuses me still yeah. too. And I'm in the industry. So if you think about, like, your money and, like, how you can grow your money, it's typically three ways that you can grow your money. So one way is to just hold on to your money and, like, put it under your pillow. And that is tricky because, you know, a dollar yesterday is not the same as a dollar today. So you're working around kind of the market and the economy in general. And the second way is savings. So if you put, you know, money into a bank account and you have a set interest rate at which that account grows, that's a way to grow your money. And a third way, and I'm sure there are many other ways, but a third way is investing. So you have a choice of how you want to invest your money and whether that be stock picking. So stock picking is like picking a particular company, investing in that company, and your returns depend on how well that company does. So if you have, I'm going to just pick out like, you know, Air New Zealand. I don't want to put Air New Zealand on the spot, but Air New Zealand did great until COVID, right?
Yeah.
So if you put like $5 into Air New Zealand in 2019, at the end of the year, you might have, it won't double, you might have $7, right? But then when COVID happens, you're going to get $1 because obviously that company took like a massive hit, as well as other airlines around the world, as well as actually lots of companies around the world. So investing into stocks is riskier because you're actually playing with the market and timings and what economy looks like, how the company performs, etc.
And over a short period of time, a company can fluctuate quite a lot. So it's always the long game when you're investing. Yeah. So when, what about the other, yeah, like the other work that you do within finance?
Yeah, so that's basically kind of what we look into is specific managers, because we're asset owner. So what we are is, okay, how do you say this? Like the government takes taxes out of someone's pay, holds a certain portion of the taxes, and then gives that portion of the taxes to the New Zealand Super Fund, and then they invest it on behalf of the government, but on a commercial basis. So we get to, with that money, choose how we want to invest, but obviously in a very responsible, sustainable type of way. And one of my roles is to kind of assess the managers who are really good at what they do around the world. So you hear about hedge funds a lot, and, you know, we look at them, we look at their performance. Is their performance good? Do they align with our goals, you know? And it's for a long period as well. It's long-term horizon. Yeah. So we're aware that, you know, companies like Air New Zealand fluctuate, but over a long horizon, like, it actually plays out. Because if you put, you know, your money into in New Zealand today and then take it out tomorrow, it's just going to, or you're going, the only return you're going to get is that short period, but over a long term it's different.
And so what type of skills would you use within your role?
So I, well, you know this, I'm doing my Masters of Applied Finance, which I've just found out is a STEM. I'm going to throw that up there. Yeah, it's a STEM because it falls under the maths. It's Applied Finance.
Is there much maths in it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it would be more like written. But is it, what is it? What is the maths like?
It's crazy. Oh. It's like, yeah, I've got a financial calculator. Scary. Everything. Yeah. Scary. I would say if I went to like a normal course, 90% of that course is maths. Yeah, wow. And then 10% theory.
Like, what type of maths are we talking?
My exams are purely Excel. Yeah. So it's like figuring out what, say, a dollar today looks like tomorrow, you know, figuring out interest rates, what else?
But that's like helpful maths. It's not like algebra maths, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, there's algebra in it. Okay. There's definitely algebra in it.
Can't escape it.
Oh, wow. But yeah, no, I do that. And those skills from the applied finance course apply directly to my work.
So it's very mathematical, your role.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so tell us more about your master's, because you're also working and you're doing your master's as well.
I feel like this is we're learning more about each other in this session, eh? Yeah, so I do my master's at AUT, just down the road from you. And I started this in at the end of 2021, I think. So I started at summer, and then I just study kind of part-time. So I studied during the transition of me moving here. So nearly kind of finished. Just got a few more course papers and then a dissertation at the end. Really? I know. I don't know.
So 1 year papers and 1 year dissertation, or is it?
If I were to study full-time, yeah. 1 year papers. And then half-year dissertation.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So while I'm here in New Zealand, I'm working part-time to study part-time. So that's why it's just taken me like 2 odd years, 2.5 years.
So have you done your papers yet?
I've got a few more papers to go and then dissertation. Yeah.
So what's the dissertation? Do you have an idea of what your dissertation will be about?
Nah, they tell you like when you get into the course, basically.
And so why are you doing your master's?
Yeah, I did a career change. So I was in, when I came back from China, I moved to the Cooks. I worked for foreign affairs for a bit, so I was a diplomat. And then I shifted, I did a full career change into finance, into superannuation. And at the time, I had, like, my boss, he was just so smart. Like,
I think I met your boss.
David.
At your birthday?
Yes.
Nice, and other colleagues.
Yeah. David's so smart. Like, he just knows his stuff. And because I did a career change, like, I thought, oh, yeah, I could just slip in. I could just, you know, take those skills that I learned from my 20s and apply it to my role. But I couldn't. I just, no matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't. Like, finance is a different world. The way that they negotiate in finance is so much different to the way they negotiate in diplomacy, you know?
Is it just, like, different language or, like, jargon?
Yeah, a whole different, word set.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, the only way that I'm going to upskill or even adjust to this role is to study finance. So originally I wanted to do a master's in economics. Mm. Yeah, but David said applied finance would work better in this industry.
Wait, what, so why did you go to finance? Did you say that before?
Oh, to adjust to the superannuation role.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, oh, do you mean why did I choose finance over economics?
Yeah, because you're saying that you had, like, a background in economics, right? But then just recently you wanted to change to finance?
No, I didn't have a great background in economics. But my very first paper of my master's was economics.
Mm.
So I enrolled in a master's of applied finance. But, you know, you have to do those core papers.
Yeah.
So economics is a core paper. I did that first. I said, I like economics. I want to change the economics. And then David said, no, stick with your applied finance. Yeah.
Cool. So before we wrap it up, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about?
I guess in regard to, like, the PT industry in New Zealand, not just in the moment, but just over the period of time, like, it's changed drastically, and also the way that people have approached their own lifestyles has obviously changed with the different things that they have had access to. So whether that's, like, now, like, with social media and the influence, that's the very strong influence of that compared to back in the days. You know, I was still reading, like, Woman's Health on the cross trainer in 2007. Like, heaps of things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, adjusting to a seasonal diet is quite a task, like, especially in the season that I'm in my life at the moment. But it's doable. It's very doable, and it's a great way to approach life. I think if you're in the right mindset, yeah. And I'm so interested in the outcomes of your study, actually going back to a traditional diet, you know. How does that work considering the level of assimilation that we've had to the New Zealand culture over this period of time?
I think definitely, like, a variation of the Samoan traditional diet would be more practical here in New Zealand. And that may look different for each person. Especially because just access to food. I mean, when you talked about your experience in the Cook Islands, like, you could go across to the market and they would have fresh food because they would have got it from their plantation.
Yeah.
Whereas here in New Zealand, you know, we go to the veggie shop, but the taro, the fresh taro, has been imported. And so it's like, it's older taro has been treated as well.
Yeah,
and so there are different factors in terms of the nutritional value of our foods that we get here in New Zealand that aren't fresh compared to our foods that we can get in the islands and just, like, walk and get them in our plantation.
Yeah. And, like, you know, if people were to fully incorporate the traditional Samoan diet into their everyday lives, is that just the nutrition side? Like, What about the, you know, what does a holistic framework look like?
Yeah, like for my research, I'm only looking at the Samoan food to see if it can address type 2 diabetes. But in reality, there are so many things that we need to look at when it comes to health, not just type 2 diabetes, but other diseases. And so it definitely, when we talk about being healthier, it's not only about food, it's about lifestyle. It's about, like we talked about, spirituality, your mental health, your how you perceive yourself, like your body image and things like that. And so I don't know what that would look like for our Samoan people in terms of like spirituality, mental health and well-being. I feel like that could be like another larger project that would contribute to more about, to learn more about our health. I think there's a lot of research that's already done, like mental health and well-being within Pacifica, but not together with like a targeted approach about like health and in terms of like non-communicable diseases.
Yeah, that's the key. Gotcha. Because I can when I think about like models already in place, like Te Whare Tapuwha, right? That's a very holistic model that, you know, different pieces of research would attribute to that, what that looks like as a whole. That's what I use in my life now, like very much so, like Whare Tapuwha, like all these different pieces add up to you.
Can you just briefly explain what that is?
Yeah. Whare Tapuwha is like, it looks at the different parts of your life. So whether that be, you know, your mental health, your spiritual health, your body, your connection to the land, your whānau, and how all of these different parts of your life contribute to your well-being, basically. And if one of those pillars fall, because if you see the diagram, it's kind of, it looks like a marae, actually. And if one of the pillars fall down, you know, kind of the whole structure falls in. So, yeah, what I was trying to say was that, you know, the nutrition part is one part of that model, but so is the personal training side. Like, it's also just one part. Yeah, I look forward to seeing like the fruits of your labor and the fruits of all other scientists' labor when it comes to this piece of work. Be great.
Yeah, be very interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Michelle, chatting with me. I was gonna say with us. I'm like the voice of everyone else is listening.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, we talked about PT and then we went all the way through like,
so it's finance. Investing stocks. Yeah, you got the whole shebang, guys.
And so thank you so much for sharing your journey and experience. I feel that it's going to be really valuable to people who are listening. And I just love how, you've lived. You've got a lot of experience. It's like beautiful to share. So thank you so much.
Oh, likewise. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with the world. And yeah, looking forward to what the next few years brings.
Thank you.